All right, open your Bibles, if you would. Genesis 29. Now, most of you guys know that my dream car is a Corvette. And I say dream car, I think it is just that. I used to think that I would one day own one, but I think I'm far too practical anymore to think that way. So, but my attention was piqued recently when I heard about this classic car lover who was looking for a late model Corvette, and he scanned the internet and he saw one of those deals that were, you know, too good to be true. It was just the car he wanted, and instead of selling for tens of thousands of dollars, it was priced at $100. Well, as a general rule, you know as well as I do, if it sounds too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. But he decided to call the number anyway, and a woman answered, and she assured him the car was in excellent condition, and the price was indeed, it was not a misprint, it was $100. And so, needless to say, he hurried over and to check this out, and he gets to her house, and sure enough, this Corvette was everything he desired. It was a perfect year, in perfect condition, and he gave her $100. He signs the paperwork, and once it was his, he starts feeling a little bit guilty. And he's like, ma'am, I got to tell you, I don't know if you know this or not, but this car is worth far more than $100. And she said, oh, I know that. You see, my husband left me for his secretary, and he sent me the title to the car and told me to sell it and send him the money from the sale. So she has very effectively deceived the deceiver. You know, we would say in our day that, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, or what goes around comes around, or you reap what you sow, and every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Well, the title of the sermon today is The Deceiver Was Deceived, right? That's exactly what happens to Jacob. Jacob, we've been talking about, is the master deceiver. He's the manipulator. He's the supplanter. And today he gets a taste of his own medicine. So Genesis 29, we're going to go through the first 30 verses this morning. I'm going to read them because I think it's important for all of us to get an overall picture of what's going on. I know there are some in here this morning that have never heard about Jacob and Rachel, or Rachel and Leah, or, you know, these names are all brand new. And so if nothing else, it's good for us just to get a good handle on the big picture of the story, and then we'll come back and pick it apart verse by verse. So Genesis 29, beginning in verse 1, then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the sons of the east. He looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it. For from that well they watered the flocks. Now the stone on the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, they would then roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep and put the stone back in its place on the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, my brothers, where are you from? And they said, we're from Haran. And he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And he said to them, is it well with him? And they said, it is well. And here's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep. And he said, behold, it is still high day. It is not time. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep and go pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered. And they roll the stone from the mouth of the well, and then we water the sheep. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came from her father with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel, and he lifted his voice and wept. Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father, and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. So when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And then he related to Laban all these things, and Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters, the name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, well, it's better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Now in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. And Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me? But Laban said, it is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service, which you shall serve with me for another 7 years. Jacob did so and completed her week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. The deceiver gets deceived. Now, as you look at this text, there's a lot of blame that you could dole out, isn't there? Jacob blames Laban. Laban blames culture. And the whole time, Leah and Rachel seem to be innocent victims of it all. But instead of kind of looking at, you know, who do we blame, we need to look at God's providential hand working through all of this. I mean, he is sovereignly in control of it all. Remember, he's the one that promised that he'll be with Jacob all the days of his life. So Jacob is on the run, but God is directing him every step of the way. And so if you're taking notes this morning, our first point is this is a providentially led flight. A providentially led flight. And so although it's providentially led, the old Jacob, the deceiver Jacob, the manipulator Jacob is alive and well. Jacob is rich with pride, and he's also rich in immaturity. Jacob needs to grow up. He's not ready for the plans that God has for him. And so this providentially led flight actually takes him to what I like to call boot camp. Now, he's going to boot camp. He is going to learn some lessons. A.W. Tozer said, it has often been said that before God can use a man greatly, he must first try him deeply. Before God can use a man greatly, he must first try him deeply. If you're going through trials right now, it could be that God is using those very things because he's got greater plans for you. You don't wake up mature, right? You grow to maturity. This is the beginning of Jacob becoming a Marine. Now, a few of you know here when I say that Jacob's feet are on the yellow footprints. Marine Corps boot camp. First thing they do, they're yelling at him, screaming at him to get on the yellow footprints. Those yellow footprints are the beginning of Hell Week. Marine Corps boot camp is 12 weeks long. Jacob's boot camp is 20 years. He's going to go through 20 years. This chapter itself, I mean, it's 14 years long. 20 years he's going through this. And so let's go through and let's just pick this up one verse at a time, or maybe one section at a time. Let's look at verse 1. It says, and Jacob went on his journey, came to the land of the sons of the east. And so that term there, he went on his journey in Hebrews means he lifted up his feet. It's kind of a way of saying he had a new bounce in his step. It tells us from there that he's really enthusiastic. Okay, why? Why was he enthusiastic? Well, God just gave him all these promises, right? I'm going to be with you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to prosper you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to provide for you. All of these things. And so he's got a new bounce in his step. Well, he makes it to Haran. We don't know how long it is. It took him to get there. And he has God's promises. And one of the God's promises is that he's going to make him a great nation. Well, if he's going to make him a great nation, what does he need? He needs a wife. And so it shouldn't surprise you that God leads them to a well. You know, we see in the scriptures often that eligible bachelors found their wives at wells. Remember, Abraham's servant found Rebekah. Jacob's mom. Where? At a well. Moses found Zipporah at a well. Jesus met a Samaritan woman at a well. This woman ended up being the first evangelist. And so he picks up his feet. He's on the go. Look at verse 2. He looked and saw a well in the field. Behold, three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it. For from that well they watered the flocks. And now the stone on the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, they would then roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, put the stone back in its place on the mouth of the well. So this well is a bit unique, as it seems like there's a large stone that was rolled to block it, to keep people keep it from getting polluted. And then they would also restrict the use of it to certain people at certain times. And so the shepherds, they would wait until all the sheep came and then they would move the stone away. And so Jacob, I mean, they're just sitting around and going, well, what are you here for? We're here to water the sheep. Water the sheep. What are you waiting on? And so he kind of engages them in conversation. Verse 4, Jacob said to them, my brothers, where are you from? And they said, we're from Haran. He said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? They said, we know him. He said to them, is it well with him? And they said, it is well. And here's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep. Now, the way that this text reads, it really draws attention to God's providence. It reads as if he happened upon a well. He didn't happen upon a well. God led him to a well. And there happened to be some shepherds. And by the way, those shepherds happened to be from where? Haran. And they happened to know Laban. Oh, look. Rachel happens to come along. Right? What a coincidence, right? No, this is God's sovereign hand. This is his providential hand in Jacob's life. And so you read through these 30 verses, and I don't know if you noticed it or not, but the Lord isn't mentioned in any of these verses. And yet his hand is over all of it. Ephesians 1 says that he works all things after the counsel of his will. And that's exactly what he's doing here. Look at verse 7. Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep and go pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered. They roll the stone from the mouth of the well, and then we water the sheep. Now, there are some commentaries that will say that Jacob is trying to send the shepherds away in order to get Rachel alone. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, if you want to believe that, that's fine. I think there is some local traditions that seem to be going on that he's confused over. You know, what are you doing at a well with sheep if you're not watering your sheep? Either give them water or take them to the pasture, right? Which is kind of gives you a little bit of insight into Jacob too, because I mean, don't you just love people who give unsolicited advice? That's what he's doing. I mean, he's telling them how to take care of their sheep. He's coming in as if he's in charge. And so you can see this old Jacob kind of still being Jacob. He's in the middle of this conversation, and then Rachel shows up, verse 9. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice, and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Now listen, if you're like me, you read that, there's just a weird turn of events that's happening, isn't there? I mean, you would expect that the first thing Jacob would do would be to introduce himself. But that's not the first thing he does. You think, okay, first he introduces himself, and then he gives a normal kiss as a greeting, and then he would water her sheep. But in verse 10, it's like Jacob saw Rachel. But that word for saw, which is really an interesting word, you know what it means? To inspect. To look at in order to consider. So this isn't just a glance. He didn't just see her. He gazed at her, and he really likes what he sees. In fact, he likes what he sees so much that he rolls a stone away by himself that usually requires a whole group of shepherds to move. Jacob is kind of in macho man mode, isn't he? What's the saying? Sun's out, guns out. I mean, that's where he's at. He sees her, he rolls a stone away, he kisses her and raises his voice. Like, what? Woo! I mean, what is that? What is he doing? And then he breaks into tears. Like, you read through this and it doesn't seem like a big deal until you go, what's he doing? And then he introduces himself. Oh, by the way, hi, I'm Jacob. Which brings us to point number two. This is love at first sight. So why did Jacob yell and weep? Anybody ever tried that before? Pick up, move. Anybody tried that? No, me either. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that he was just overjoyed. He 500 miles. He's finally safely in Haran. He's with his mother's relatives. God did what he said he was going to do. Maybe he wept because of how much Rachel reminded him of his mother. Maybe he was missing his mother, because that kind of seems, verse 10, look at verse 10. When three times he talks about his mother. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob went up and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. The point is what Jacob is doing is he's trying to arrange everything for his advantage, because that's Jacob. But we have to look at this and remember that God is there, and he's although he's not mentioned, he's there the whole time. Like he's working behind the scenes. He's ordering everything. And it's God who's going to use these circumstances to shape Jacob in ways that Jacob cannot even imagine. It also seems that Rachel is a bit of a willing participant, right? What does she do? She excitedly runs home to tell her dad. Look at verse 13. So when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him, embraced him, kissed him, and brought him to his house. And then he, Jacob, related to Laban all these things. Everybody's kissing. Common greeting there, right? It's a sign of hospitality. Even now, many places around the world, they greet you by kissing you. And when it says that Jacob related to Laban, he says, all these things. What do you think he communicated? What do you think he said? Well, I would say he probably talked about his mom, right? That's his sister. Laban's sister is his mom. He probably talked about his dad's failing health. I'm doubtful, though, that he told him of Esau. And deceiving Esau out of his birthright. I'm doubtful that he told him of deceiving his dad into giving him Esau's blessing. I do think maybe it went something like this. He says, hey, well, all these things, so your sister, my mom, she told me to come to Haran and look for a wife. And as soon as I left there, I'm leaving there and I'm on my way here, and God met me in a dream in Bethel, and God brought me here, and he promised to provide for me and protect me and all of these things, you know, because I need, and then he looks at Rachel, you know, her wife. Verse 14, Laban said to him, surely you are of my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him a month. Remember, Laban's the, if Jacob's in boot camp, Laban is your drill instructor. Okay, he is going to manipulate and show him, because it's time to grow. So he stays a month. What do you think he did during that month? I bet he took up shepherding with a shepherdess named Rachel. Look at verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, so this is a month later, then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall be your wages be? So a month goes by, and Jacob proves that he's a good worker, and a good worker would make for a good son-in-law. And so Laban is thinking, oh man, we may have something here. Because we've read ahead, we know this is 7 years, right? At least 7 years. So this is a win-win situation. Jacob gets a wife, Laban gets a laborer. But it's boot camp. And Laban is an older version of Jacob. If Jacob told him, think about this. What if Jacob says, I need to find a wife because my dad's dying? Laban was the one that would remember how wealthy his dad Isaac was. Now he's going, well, we've got this strong Jacob. He's not married. I've got two daughters who are both eligible wives. And his mind must be going nuts. And the more we read about Laban, the more we see that he's always a step ahead. Jacob's going to see that eventually. He's not going to see it yet. So a month goes by, things go well. He falls head over heels in love with Rachel. Life's taking a turn for the better. His past is behind him. He'd probably be singing the song we sang earlier, Forgiven. Right? I'm forgiven. Forgiven. It's all done. It's all past. Laban's shrewd, though. He's selfish. He's clear. Jacob, you've been here a month. You ain't going to freeload indefinitely. A month's long enough. You got to work for your keep. Jacob doesn't see that. He thinks Uncle Laban likes him. Right, he's part of the family. He's free and clear from his past and the consequences of his past. But did you notice in verse 15 that he calls Jacob his relative? Look at it. He said 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me? He goes from relative to slave. You see that? Say little, just that verse. You're my relative. You're going to serve me. Now look at verse 16 and 17. Now Laban, it almost seems like it's a parenthesis here. I'm kind of taking it that way. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. So what it looks like here is that Rebecca's scheme has worked. Okay, she's got him to Haran. She's got the wife lined up. Everything's good. He's got a job. He has the birthright. He's got the blessing. There's no sign of Esau chasing him anymore. God forgave him. And then, woo-wee, look at who this is, Rachel. Now, listen, names mean something, right? We talk about that often in here. The name Rachel. Rachel means ewe, E-W-E, a female lamb. Okay, she's a shepherdess, and so kind of a cute picture, right? Female lamb. You know what Leah means? Don't get mad at me now. I'm the mailman. I'm just delivering the mail here. Wild cow. So if you've got a choice between marrying the female lamb and the wild cow, who do you choose? Now listen, a lot of commentaries, they make Leah out to be ugly. Right? That's I would say the vast majority, you hear sermons on Leah and she's ugly. They look at Rachel as if she's this beautiful, she's got the dark eyes, sparkling eyes, which is a really attractive thing in the Middle East. That's kind of how they measure attractiveness. You notice Leah has weak eyes, right? But Rachel's beautiful in form and face. And again, this is my picture. It's almost as if you have this Rachel as this little Pomeranian that's been freshly groomed and it's got these bright eyes looking at you. And then you get Leah, who's like a basset hound that's just those weak eyes. I know that sounds funny, but it's like the weak eyes, like that. It's kind of like that. That's how people picture them. But I don't think that's the case. Yes, in the Middle East, dark eyes, sparkly eyes, that was a mark of beauty. So Leah's eyes, when it says weak, immediately we think, well, that must be ugly. But when you take that word weak there, it doesn't mean ugly. In fact, it's rarely used in the Old Testament in a negative sense. We've already seen this word once in Genesis 18 when the angel of the Lord shows up and Abraham ran to the herd. Remember, and he takes a calf to prepare for him. You remember what kind of calf it was? Tender calf. Same word. So what if you said Leah had tender eyes? All of a sudden it's not negative. That Hebrew word can be translated tender, weak. It could be translated spoiled, or coddled, or soft, or gentle, mild. Genesis 33, it's translated frail. That's not a word used for ugly. Listen, no doubt Rachel's eyes sparkled. Leah's eyes were gentle. Rachel was stunning. Leah was soft. So why do you think that Moses would draw our attention to Rachel's physical attributes? Because that's what Jacob was seeing. He desired her form and her face. He desired her beauty. And then if you take Rachel and contrast Rachel with Rebecca, Jacob's mom, remember Rebecca was chosen for Isaac, divine guidance, right? Great character qualities. Let me make a fine wife for Isaac. Plus, she was beautiful. On the other hand, what did Jacob choose? He chose Rachel without any mention of her character. He chose her because she had a nice body and a pretty face. You know what we're going to see later? Rachel has some serious character flaws. She idolized having children. She couldn't have children. You know what she tells Jacob? Give me children lest I die. That's a heart idol. Remember later on, Jacob finally leaves Laban. It's been 20 years. Laban pursues him and he's saying, listen, I understand why you left, but why'd you take my idols? Jacob's like, we didn't take any idols. You go around, look in the tent, see if any of our people took your idols. You know who took them? The pretty one, sparkly eyes. Leah may have lacked the sparkle in her eyes that men admired, but it was Leah's son, Judah, as the one who would carry on the messianic line. Look at verse 18. Now Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. Did he say that he was going to give her to him? No, he never does, right? He's like, oh yeah, well, it would be better if I gave him to you. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. I doubt Jacob has worked for anybody in his whole life. He may have helped to tend some of his father's flocks and do some household chores, but daddy was rich. Jacob would have had servants to serve him. And so point number three is he's working for a wedding night. Working for a wedding night. If Jacob hadn't practiced all this deceit and had to flee for his life, he would have still come to Haran. He could have still secured a wife from there. And he could have done it easily, within a day, right? Because he's got all of his daddy's gifts. They could have lived happily ever after. But his deception cost him all that. Now he's got to work for his bride. And the prophecy said that Esau would serve Jacob, but now Jacob has committed to serve Laban. 7 years. He thinks it's 7 years. We know it's 20. What's the point? Well, I think the point of verse 20 is that Rachel was well worth whatever price Jacob was willing to pay. Problem is he doesn't have any money. So the only thing he can offer is to work for Laban. And I would say, welcome to boot camp. These were hard years. But between like 19 and 20, 7 years go by. Look at verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her. And Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. So again, Jacob's got this physical desire for Rachel, and that has to be expected. But it's also, I think if you read into this, you realize that it's a bit ironic as well. Because these physical desires are exactly the things that Jacob would use previously to deceive people, right? It was Jacob had a physical desire for Rachel, right? But Esau had a physical desire for food. Like, give me that red stuff, that red stew, otherwise I'm going to die. Right? So he used his physical desire to con him out of his birthright. And then his dad, he had a physical desire for wild game. And that physical desire enabled Jacob to trick him and get Esau's blessing. You see, when other people had physical desires, Jacob used them against him. Jacob's desire was what? Rachel's beauty. And Laban uses that as leverage against him. So Jacob was ready for a wedding night in 21, but he was not ready for Laban's treachery. Look at verse 23. Now in the evening, he took his daughter Leah, brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me?" By the way, just a really quick there in 24, it almost seems like as Moses is writing this, it's just a parentheses, just a little, oh, by the way, the Zilpah, the maid. If this were Hollywood, that would have been the emphasis. But it's just kind of written in there, kind of happenstance. So here's Jacob. 7 years he worked for this day. 7 years he's been waiting. And a lot of people, we take this text and we pull it into our Western culture. And we think, there's no way he wouldn't have known. Think about it. Nobody's throwing rice as they get into a limo. Right? They don't check into a hotel together. He doesn't carry her over the threshold and then turn the lights off. Who brought her to the tent? Laban did. She's veiled. There's no lights. He's excited. It really parallels Jacob's deception. Think about it. Jacob deceived his blind father. And then he gets deceived in a dark tent. Jacob deceives his father, and now is deceived by his bride's father. Jacob cheated his brother out of the rights of the firstborn, and then he gets cheated because if he married Rachel, then the rights of the firstborn would have been violated. Who knows? Jacob probably used his brother's clothes, or Jacob did use his brother's clothing and his scent when he deceived Isaac. So it's completely possible that Leah dressed in Rachel's clothes and wore her perfume. They may have been the same size. Obviously, one of the big differences between the two of them is their eyes, but it's dark. He can't see her. And so here he is. He's unsuspecting. He's overanxious. He's in a perfect position as a deceiver to be deceived, which is point number four, shock at first light. So after this wonderful night, Jacob wakes up, beautiful day, exciting future, and he thinks he's got Mrs. Sparkle Eyes laying next to him, and he wakes up to the, I don't want to say basset hounds, that sounds so bad. He wakes up to the delicate one, to the tender one, to the gentle one. What a shock this must have been for him as the sunlight came into the text. And what irony surrounds this text. It's actually the words that Jacob uses are the same words that Pharaoh said to Abraham when Abraham tricked him. What is this you have done to me? Wasn't just the Pharaoh, though. That's also what Abimelech said to Abraham. It's also what the other Abimelech said to Isaac. You can almost hear Jacob going, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm the one who deceives around here. You don't get to get me. I get to get you. Like, nobody ever gets me. How dare you? But Laban's ready for that, right? Because he's had a few years to think about this as well. Look at verse 26. Laban said, "It is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one," in other words, a marriage week, "and then we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve me for." How long should we wait? Well, let's just say another 7 years. Jacob did so and completed her week and he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah. He served with Laban for another 7 years. So when it's all said and done, Laban gets both daughters married off and he gets them at a premium price. Jacob ends up with two wives rather than one, and he had to work twice as hard to get the one that he desired. But what seems so evil to us. We look at this and say, wow, how evil this is. This evil is what God is going to use to discipline Jacob. Why? Because before God can use a man greatly, he must first try him deeply. See, what God knows that Jacob doesn't know is one day God is going to change his name to Israel. He's going to be the founder of a new nation that's going to be known as God's people, and he's not ready for that. So how do we apply this? Three statements, I think. This was a hard one to figure out. There was a lot of application, but how do we break this up? How do I break this up was the hard part. But I think it'll make sense. Point number one in application, you do what you think is best for you. Okay, that's what we see in here. Think about it. Why did Jacob trick Esau out of his birthright? Because he thought that would be best for himself. Why did he deceive his dad out of Esau's blessing? Because that would be best for myself. He runs away. Why? Because that would be best for myself. He desired Rachel's body and beauty. Why? Because that would be best for myself. He faces these crucial decisions in his life, and we see nothing of him praying. He commits himself to 7 years of work for Laban, and he never asks what God's will is. He commits to marry Rachel without seeking God's guidance. He accepts a polygamous situation without getting God's approval. Later, he takes his wife's handmaids, and he never seeks God's will in that. He pursues Rachel because how she presented herself on the outside. And I think that would be better for me. Of course you should be attracted to your wife. But if all you see is outward beauty, beauty fades. What's her character like? What's her relationship with the Lord like? Proverbs 31, verse 30, charm is deceitful. Beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Even Paul, when he was instructing Timothy on the behavior of the people in the church, he included the women in the church. Look what he says, 1 Timothy 2, verse 9. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness. And I would simply tell our young men, character matters. Nothing wrong with a pretty face, but not only a pretty face. Now, if you find character that has charm and beauty, great. But if you're blinded by beauty, there's a good chance that you're going to be blinded to even considering her character. Beauty may seem best to you. Don't do what's best for you. Choose those things that would glorify God the most. Number two, there are consequences for what you do. Well, there are a lot of consequences in this text, aren't there? What Jacob thought was best for him, he ends up working for Laban for 20 years. This is just the law of sowing and reaping. The very thing that Jacob was known for, his deception, his supplanting, the very thing he was known for was what God was going to use to grow him. And the tragedy of Genesis 29 is none of it was necessary. None of it. Yes, God uses the consequences of Jacob's sin to accomplish his will. Like we recognize that. That's the goodness of God. Remember 5 chapters ago, we were introduced to Laban. He got word that a rich servant is at the well looking for a bride. Look what he does, Genesis 24, verse 29. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. And Laban ran outside to the man at the spring. And when he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrist, same word, that saw, he gazed at them. Right? When he saw, he looked in order to consider. When he saw the ring, the bracelets on his sister's wrist, and when he heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, saying, "This is what the man said to me," he went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring, and he said, "Come in, blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside since I have prepared the house and a place for the camels?" He's tricky, isn't he? So the man entered the house. Then Laban unloaded the camels. He gave straw and feed to the camels, water to wash his feet, and the feet of the men who were with him. Why did he do that? He saw the riches. And when he sees the riches, all of a sudden he flips. Now he's talking about God. Now he becomes a servant. And we know that this is his heart, because when Laban sees Jacob, Laban becomes his master. Not 7 years, not 14 years, 20 years. These are Jacob's consequences. Rebekah goes to the well to get water. Remember, Rebekah goes to get water, Jacob's mom. She goes to get water. She leaves the next day on a journey to meet Isaac. It was easy for Isaac and Rebekah because Abraham was rich. Servant shows up with 10 camels and a whole bunch of jewelry. And one of the consequences of Jacob's sin was that he left Canaan empty-handed. You know why? Because he did what he thought was best for him. And then his sin separated him from his father's wealth. His sin separated him from his mother. Proverbs says the way of the sinner is hard. So I would simply ask you, what consequences are you going through that are the direct result of your sin or maybe somebody else's sin? It's just hard. That consequence may be physical, it may be financial, it may be emotional, it may be relational, it may be spiritual. And the good news in all of this is that what Satan means for evil, God can turn around and use it for good. Which brings us to our final point, number three, there's grace for what you do. Now don't for a second look at this passage and think that God is getting even with Jacob. He's not taking revenge on him. Genesis 29 is evidence of grace. God is at work in the life of Jacob. God was not punishing him, he was discipling him. Huge difference. Christ took our punishment on the cross. He doesn't punish us. He disciples us, he disciplines us so that we would become more like Christ. Jacob is undisciplined. Jacob needs boot camp. He needs to learn submission. Jacob needs to learn the value of hard work. He needs to learn how it feels to be manipulated and deceived. He needs to learn grace. And listen, it may be that grace is the last thing you see in here. And yet, Leah is a gift of grace. He didn't deserve a wife like Leah. And in the providence of God, and in spite of all the deception and everything else, Leah became Jacob's wife. And it was Leah, not Rachel, who became the mother of Judah. And he goes, so what? So what? She got a bunch of sons. So what that she's Judah's mom? Revelation 5, verse 1. I saw on the right hand of him who sat on the throne a book written inside and on the back, sealed up with seven seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the book and to break its seals? No one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the book or to look into it. Then I began to weep greatly because no one was found worthy to open the book or to look into it. And one of the elders said to me, stop weeping. Behold, the lion that is from the tribe of what? Judah. The root of David has overcome so as to open the book and its seven seals. From Leah comes Judah. And from Jesus comes from the tribe of Judah. He's worthy. And in Jacob's mind, Rachel is superior to Leah. And in God's mind, just the opposite is true. In fact, Leah and her handmaid, they had at least twice the number of children that Rachel and her handmaid had. I don't think that's a coincidence that Leah is the firstborn and the firstborn gets a double portion. And you know who else came from Leah? Levi did. Levi provided the priestly line that was to come. In fact, in the order of their death, Rachel, who was younger, dies before Leah does. And when she died, she was buried on the way to Bethlehem. When Leah died, she was buried with Jacob in the cave of Machpelah, along with Abraham and Sarah, and along with Isaac and Rebekah. Leah was not a burden to Jacob. Leah was a blessing. Leah was a gift given to Jacob by grace. And her son, the lion from the tribe of Judah, is your gift as well. This Jesus who would take the punishment of death would say, if you believe, if you trust, then you have eternal life. Our Father, thank you for these pictures of grace throughout your word. Thank you for this one who is the lion from the tribe of Judah, who suffered, died, and was buried, and on the third day rose again. Thank you that he makes salvation so simple and yet so profound. Father, we pray that, pray for somebody in here this morning who has never yet trusted Christ. Today, by faith, I pray that they would do so. I pray for us that we would see grace in all that you do, even in the difficult things of life. We thank you, we trust you, we love you. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. Josh.